We will now have the group that worked on urban agriculture. So Claire, Gabrielle, Marine, Melissa, and Nicola.
So we'll leave it to play that, okay?
We're ready.
Hello again.
Let me just put this a little higher.
So, hi. Urban agriculture is simply put the activity of growing and raising food within the city. It is based on promoting sustainability through certain desirable effects, such as reducing urban heat islands and reducing the environmental impact of food miles. As a group, we have decided to construct a Google Earth, an interactive map to show certain areas of interest of urban agriculture, particularly to students. These places can either be just for pure curiosity or for daily use. My focus has been on businesses' use of urban agriculture in increasing employee engagement, providing directly to customers, and part of an overall sustainability business-wide policy, which I will get into later.
We looked at many different examples of urban agriculture. One example was farmers market. In Montreal, there are four main farmers markets: Lachine, Atwater, Maisonneuve, and Jean Talon. These markets provide local and fresh produce to many Montrealers. One example of a small neighborhood farmers market is Little Burgundy's Citizens Market, run by Centre Paul Roulon. This little market is located in a food desert, meaning that the neighborhood does not have access to large supermarkets. This market provides fresh and affordable produce sold at low cost through a half-off coupon system. Farmers markets help reconnect local economies and communities, simultaneously supporting public health and the local food systems. Another example was the McGill Apiary Association, located at McGill's McDonald campus in St. Anne de Bellevue. Their mission is to raise awareness of the importance of bees for pollination, fight people's fears of bees, help with university research, and have educational programs for the community. Students and other community members can also volunteer and learn how to start their own beehives. McGill Apiary Association is also economically sustainable because they sell the honey that they produce.
So another form of urban agriculture is community-supported agriculture, so that's CSA. It's a system of food distribution where a network of individuals provide the startup costs for local farms. So for example, once they have the money, the farms can buy seeds. And then when the harvesting actually begins, these supporters, they receive weekly baskets of fruits and vegetables in their local neighborhood pickup destinations. So there's a variety of sources like rooftop farms, traditional farms, or fruits, vegetables, also meat products. So CSA members share the risks and benefits in the food production. So if the season is bad, they will receive lower amounts of produce, but they do get to know where their food is coming from and lower their carbon footprints. So In Montreal, there are about 90 farms that participate in CSA programs. And for those who want to be more actively engaged, there are also community gardens where you can just go farm on your own plot. And there are about 100 in Montreal. So, sorry, if we can go into the specific proposal. So, my name is Claire, and I'm looking into the social benefits of an intergenerational rooftop garden in Montreal. So when we were looking at all of these urban agriculture initiatives in Montreal, we realized that one category was missing, so vertical farms. A vertical farm is like a skyscraper greenhouse, and crops and animals are grown and raised in them. And so this is a very expanding idea as our global population is increasing and our cropland is dwindling. So these are in cities, and it's an up-and-coming undertaking. This is the image of one in South Korea. So the benefits of a vertical farm include a closed water loop, year-round crop productions, protection from severe weather events, the creation of new jobs, but mainly it's about the production of local, fresh, organic food while decreasing water, energy, and land use. So A vertical farm is like a stacked, a vertical farm is like many greenhouses stacked on top of each other. So the benefits from vertical farm are also applicable to greenhouses. So my main question is, how can an intergenerational work on a rooftop garden in Montreal bring us closer to urban sustainability? So I want to implement a retirement home with a greenhouse garden on the roof. So these would have many social benefits, like overall building of a community, a sense of ownership and responsibility for what they're growing, interest in where the food is coming from, and self-empowerment. So these are some examples of social benefits, but there are also environmental benefits. These include decreasing fossil fuel emissions, decreasing heat island effect, decreasing food miles, decreasing runoff from the soil that retains the rainwater, and increasing biodiversity, for example, attracting pollination, birds, insects, but mainly it's about localizing the food. So rooftop gardens may seem like a small action on a global scale, but really they induce awareness, they induce awareness around our food systems while providing a feasible solution. Thank you.
Okay, hi, my name is Gabrielle. As a native Montrealer and student of the school environment, I am immersed in the topic of urban sustainability every day. Being so involved in these issues every day, it's often easy to forget that many of the general public do not share the environmentally responsible attitudes of my peers, and many of them are often unaware of the sustainability issues that we face. This desire to increase awareness and education about sustainability, coupled with my research into Montreal's community garden program for our sustainability map, led me to my idea. I propose to expand our community garden program to include plots specifically reserved for the use of youth centers. Youth centers wishing to participate in the program will receive tools necessary for implementation, including seedlings and activity guides, which will outline what the youth are expected to accomplish. They will also have access to all the materials generally provided by community garden program, including soil, water, and gardening tools. Urban youth often have very little interaction with the natural world and are completely removed from the food production process. Outdoor experiences have been shown to have a positive influence on environmental attitudes and to impact career choices and conservation efforts later on in life. My objectives for this project are to provide youth with an opportunity to have meaningful interactions with the environment and a better understanding of where their food comes from. I hope to include youth from low-income families, as they represent a section of society that I feel have the most to gain from a project like this. I'm hoping that this program will have profound effects on the way that youth interact with our environment and the choices they make later on in life. In the U.S., there have been many school garden projects implemented. Montreal's short growing season, however, makes school gardens much less feasible. This is why I believe that a summer gardening program working in conjunction with youth centers could work effectively. Through my research, I have located many youth centers in Montreal that could take advantage of this program. On this map that I made, I chose the Mercier-Hochelaga-Maisonneuve borough, which is generally considered to be one of the most socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods in Montreal. And the yellow pins indicate youth centers, and the red pins indicate community gardens. So as you can see, some of them are located very close to each other, which makes the project feasible. And it also points to which gardens would be most effective for use in the program. There has actually been a substantial amount of research on the effects that youth gardens have on academic achievements, life skills, leadership skills, and nutrition, and most of them with overwhelmingly positive results. And although none of these reflect the goal of my project, they represent a small number of positive externalities that I believe will be accomplished by my project. There have been a number of studies regarding the effects on youth gardens on environmental attitudes. However, most of them have had inconclusive results. With the use of both qualitative and quantitative analyses, I want to conduct a longitudinal study to answer the following question. Does participation in a garden program increase environmentally responsible attitudes among Montreal's youth? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Maureen Dashiell, and my research proposal is titled Be Peace.
Food security is a growing issue around the world because of its critical effect on a large amount of people. One way to combat food insecurity in Montreal is through urban agriculture. Many urban agriculture initiatives exclude poor communities because they do not have the economic power to participate. At the same time, bees are dying. Bee death is due to colony collapse disorder caused by malnutrition, loss of genetic diversity, pathogens, and pesticides. This small insect is a keystone species and provides one-third of our food that we eat. These pollination services are valued at $20 billion a year. And if they were lost, the price of food would skyrocket. My project wishes to explore how can an NGO implement an urban apiary in a low-income community, and would it be beneficial? The first step would be to find a low-income community, such as Hochelaga-Maisonneuve. This community has an average annual income of $38,000, and in comparison with the average income for Montreal is $58,000 a year. Setting up an apiary is quite simple, and provincial laws have some basic regulations. Apiaries must be 15 meters away from houses or public streets. My project would be set up with a single apiary to start with the help of a Montreal organization, Alvéol, who has been setting up apiaries around Montreal for 2 years. They would provide all the necessary equipment and education to the people who would like to learn how to become apiculturists. The coordinator, myself, would work with the community to sell that honey and invest it back into urban agriculture initiatives that community members propose. This project is relatively easy to begin and would provide enormous benefits to the community, bees, and to Montreal. Beehives produce 20 to 40 kilograms of honey a year and can be sold at $40 a kilo. My projects would teach people how to become beekeepers and give them job opportunities. At the same time, the money made from the honey sales would be reinvested into community gardens and other forms of urban agriculture, which would provide citizens access to more food. Socially, beekeeping can provide people with a sense of purpose because they are caring for living animals, like having a dog or a cat. At the same time, it builds communities. Beekeeping also makes people want to provide food for these bees. This translates into more flowers and green spaces, which is shown to provide people with mental and physical health benefits. Ecologically, having bees in an urban environment increases pollination, more urban crops, flowers, trees, helps save the bee population, increases biodiversity, increases bee genetic diversity. In conclusion, bees provide important economic, social, and environmental benefits. So do not fear bees and work to save them and simultaneously benefit Montrealers.
So my name is Melissa, and my original research question had to do with food deserts and urban agriculture. So food deserts are described as places where there are physical and economic barriers to accessing healthy food. But the interesting thing about Montreal is that there aren't actually food deserts, relatively speaking. In fact, lower-income neighborhoods in Montreal tend to be located in the center of the city and have better access to supermarkets. And yet, for households earning less than $20,000 a year in Montreal, only 19% of those households consume the minimum required amount of fruits and vegetables. And every month, 140,000 Montrealers still depend on food banks to meet their dietary needs. But even though low-income families are closer to supermarkets, this variety in supermarkets is very much an illusion. When you look at seven of the largest supermarkets in Montreal, you realize that they really are just subsidiaries of two, maybe three larger companies, and their fruits and vegetables are mass-produced with pesticides and herbicides, and they come with an incredibly large ecological footprint, considering that they're coming from all over the world to reach different supermarkets. And even if organic food is available in these supermarkets, the prices are significantly higher, which would strain already strained budgets of low-income families. So when doing further research, we realized that Montreal doesn't have a food desert issue, it has a lack of food sovereignty issue. One Canadian policy activist summarized food sovereignty as when food is of, by, and for the people. And it attempts to fix the structural issues of the world food system by fighting for people's right to produce their own food in their own territory. So considering that low-income Montreal neighborhoods don't have a lack of access to supermarkets, it would be safe to assume that adding more of the same supermarkets would not fix the food sovereignty issue. And since it is very much part of the very same world system that creates the structural issues of food insecurity, alternatives need to be looked for. So in light of this, I tried to look for different food retailers, and my research question became, can local dépanneurs use urban farming to increase food sovereignty in low-income neighborhoods? So as you all know, dépanneurs are all over here in Montreal. There are 1,127 dépanneurs in Montreal alone, and they are often owned by immigrants, and because they represent one of the few fields where there is very little barrier to entry and you only need a little bit of capital. So this particular dépanneur is called Dépanneur Familial, and it's in the St. Henry neighborhood, which, despite gentrification, is still considered to be a relatively low-income one. So although this neighborhood may not be considered a food desert, it is still a good, almost a 1 kilometer away from the nearest supermarket, and Atwater Market, which is a bit further to the east, although it does provide local and fresh produce, it's much more expensive than what the average St. Henry resident can afford, and even more than what the average McGill student would want to pay for. So considering its low income status and its dependency on chain supermarkets, the St. Henry neighborhood is certainly going through food insecurity. So the Dépanneur Familial in particular has 10,268 square feet of unused green space sitting nearby. If this dépanneur were to have access to the space to grow fruits and vegetables for their customers, and if they had the same model and the same meal that, say, Edible Campus, they could grow 60,000 kilograms of fresh fruits and vegetables in one growing season, which would provide local residents with local food harvested the very same day. For sustainable development, this has a multitude of implications. Environmentally, it would reduce the urban heat island effect that plagues areas like these, and it would also reduce the ecological footprint needed, the ecological footprint of fruits and vegetables coming from far away. Economically, it would also give the dépanneur a more competitive edge against larger supermarkets, and it would benefit the local economy through the local business owner and the local resident. Socially, through increased health and physical and economic accessibility to nutritious food, it would definitely be one step closer to food sovereignty, and it would extend the rights of food sovereignty not just to the nation or the province or the city, but to every neighborhood with a corner store. Thank you.
Hi. In the short span of 3 minutes, I hope to convince you all that through a community-based urban agriculture approach, it may be possible to bridge the gap between both the paradigms of neoclassical economics and sustainability. Through this course, it has become clear to me that at their core, the paradigms of both neoclassical economics and sustainability come into clear conflict with one another in regards to their goals and indicative measures. Whereas neoclassical economics is typically oriented around self-interests, markets, and profits, sustainability is based on a global civic society and other non-monetary indicators such as equity. It has thus become extremely difficult for both competing paradigms to coexist. Business management theory contends that within a business, employees are the key to profitable success. Sustainability management theory has often contended that creating a corporate culture of sustainability can act as a mobilizing force in allowing for further employee engagement in the workplace. Community-based urban agriculture, CBOA, in the North American context, is often implemented for the rationale of building social capital within a community. In my view, this therefore suggests a common thread of social capital within both paradigms. This has therefore led me to my research question, can a CBOA model within a business be both beneficial for sustainability and for profitability? My hypothesis is clearly yes, it can. The Auto Group, located in Saint-Laurent, has used a CBOA model for the implementation of its employee garden. This has acted as a significant inspiration for my research question. My proposed research would thus involve using Aldo as an existing case study to investigate into the validity of my hypothesis. The data collected could thus be used as a framework for strategies that businesses in Montreal in treating and developing CBOA can adopt. To develop this framework, my research would use interviews, questionnaires, and statistical methods with data collected from the Aldo headquarters. Interviews would be conducted for various levels of Aldo's management, including the HR and CSR departments. These interviews would be used to determine significant points of interest, such as the existing basis of Aldo's corporate vision and the role sustainability plays within that vision. It would also be used to determine how sustainability is used as a common ground for the motivation and daily practices of employees. Through obtaining employee performance reviews with numerical scores, a statistical analysis, such as an ANOVA analysis, could be used to assess the impact that the community garden has had. For employees involved in the garden, interviews could be used to see how the garden has changed their work practices and views on sustainability in their home and work lives. Questionnaires could be used for employees not involved in the garden to understand the barriers which have kept people from participating. Through obtaining this data, the research would hopefully be able to confirm that it is indeed possible to increase a firm's profits through revolutionizing workforce engagement, while simultaneously working towards a more sustainable planet and society. An ensuing framework could thus be laid in implementing a similar CBUA model garden in other businesses in Montreal and perhaps across the globe. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions. I'll just bring the mic over to you.
My question is for Melissa. That's a great project, first of all, and the use of the word dépanneur worldwide will be awesome. I'm just wondering, there seems to be an assumption that the people from poor neighborhoods are not eating the satisfying amounts of fruits and vegetables per day because they cannot, not because they don't want to. How do you envision, if you have your fruits and vegetables in the dépanneur, that they would want to eat them? Like, that it would be their taste to eat them?
Mm-hmm. This is definitely not a single factor issue. It's structural, so there's definitely going to be many factors at play. We're going to need something like Gabby's project to help with educating children, etc. What the dépanneur would do, I mean, dépanneurs are everywhere, especially in this neighborhood. In that particular neighborhood, you would find a dépanneur more easily than if you were looking for a supermarket. And on top of that, considering that there are virtually no transportation costs, and that it would be a lot more accessible physically and economically, you would assume that at least people would have more space in their food budget to increase their fresh fruits and vegetable intake.
Just some observations. Very good presentation. Much appreciated. This assumption is a very stereotyped assumption about immigrants and others not eating fruits and vegetables. If you see the success of successful dépanneurs, they are immigrants who have the best stock groceries and fresh produce. The best example would be the manner in which the Korean who is minding the store in La Cité started in the basement, and he has perhaps the best produce. The same story goes with Adonis, which was bought out by Metro. So certainly we have to do little more detailed work in there. Number two, certainly this strategy to work in a decentralized manner is a very important one. Whether one engages in the production itself or somebody else does it, that's a different story altogether, because dépanneur minders are working very closely to the cash, the family. They not 7-Eleven, they are 6-12. So that's what... the maps which you have done is a very impressive one. Just a few days ago, a new map was released by Cray Montréal and UQAM's team of students, a very extensive map, interactive one, on the web of complete UA throughout city of Montreal, worth consulting. There is a detailed study done on food deserts by Santé Publique, Lise Bertrand. She done that. So there are other studies related to it.
Thank you very much. I think I saw a hand here. Did you have a question?
I was just going to say, can you speak? The local people in the community could be the ones who are out there planting the seeds and digging, and they could be hired, and then they would be proud, and they would speak to their neighbors, and it would be very quick to educate if there were a problem.
It's in the final paper.
Oh, pardon. You can wave loudly if I'm not able to see.
Thanks. A bit of a process question for you to reflect on, because like, there's some really cool research you did about a problem that you see in the community, and then there was a point where you had to start coming up with like designing a solution. Like, you had to come up with an idea for a way to solve this problem, and then you started researching, like, is this solution viable? Like, is there a good business case for this solution? What was it like as a research project having to do the research and then also do idea creation, because, to be frank, there's a lot of research that doesn't do that idea creation phase. And I'd be really interested to hear from you, either now or later, what that was like in this course.
This is for anyone, right?
Yeah.
Well, for me personally, I actually came up with my project idea first before I came up with my research question idea. I really wanted to incorporate youth in gardening programs, and I'd seen, after I did my research, I realized it was being done in many other parts of the world, just not necessarily so much in Montreal. And through my research, I came across a bunch of studies that talked about how much of the research that had been done on youth gardens had been largely inconclusive, and that's how my research question came about. So I actually started with the project. I'm not sure about my colleagues, but I think a lot of us had the same kind of process.
Yeah. I saw a gap. There's not very many apiaries in Montreal, and not a lot of them are public either. And I actually started talking to people, so I didn't really know my research question, but then I started talking to one of Professor Julia's friends in Vancouver who did this, and she had an amazing project, and it actually was through her that I really got my idea. And then talking to Alveol, who is in Montreal, they really said it's completely possible, it's completely feasible, you should totally go for it. And so it was really talking to people that my research question really came out.
For me, it was sort of, I looked at the literature and I sort of had in mind that businesses are looking to engage social capital. And when studying urban agriculture, sort of here in the North American context, it's often seen not so much for what it produces, but what it can do for a community. So I saw a common thread with that. And then when I saw this, when we were doing research for our map, and I saw this Aldo business and I saw their model, it just really clicked to me how they were really emphasizing the community basis. I mean, I'd like to do more research, as it's my research proposal, but I think that, yeah, it was sort of a literature, and then seeing it really applied, that sort of showed me that it could work.
I think on a last note, it's easy to see new initiatives that are happening elsewhere and try to apply them here, because Montreal is a growing city and it's seen as green, and so we can rely on other inspirations for our city too.
We have time for a couple more questions.
One more, Chris?
Hello. This one's for Claire. Maybe I missed it, but I just wanted to know, for your seniors' home, are the actual seniors going to be working on these? Or
yeah. Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to explain. So actually, I picked a place in Little Burgundy, a site where they already have a volunteer program with the elderly. And so they have the infrastructure because they have a very large building, so they have a flat roof. And so if they start having this garden, they can all work on it together. And actually, it's a specific location where they have like different kinds of people. So some aren't as like mobile as others, but they can all work together.
Thank you, Ed Lindsay.
Oh, for Maureen. In class, we talked about how one, maybe not such a big problem, but one thing about beekeeping in urban areas is that a lot of people are afraid of bees or have allergies or whatever. So I was just wondering how you aim to address this with your proposal, or any solutions you'd come up with.
So a lot of people are afraid of beer. sorry. A lot of people are afraid of bees, and that's actually it's a really big problem. But through education, you can realize that bees actually don't sting you, really. They only sting mostly hornets and wasps. And most people are like, you know, when bees swarm, when they leave their hive, that people see like tons and tons, thousands of bees, and they're like, they're going to attack me, and they're going to, but that's totally untrue, because that's when bees are so full of honey, the only thing they can think about is sticking together and finding a new home and not losing their queen. So the last thing they're going to think about is trying to like find some people and attack them and scare them. But so talking to the guys from Alveol, they said that, you know, and Hives for Humanity in Vancouver, the biggest thing is once people start you know, seeing that bees are not going to attack them and being around bees, that they really realize that they're not harmless, obviously, but that they can be in, you can work with them and treated with respect. Any animal is, it's still an animal. And if you keep the hives clean and healthy and have a lot of water for them, they're not going to sting you.
Thank you very much.